Hello and welcome to English Digest. My name is Tim.
And my name's Patrick.
Well, today is October the 30th, and we're on the second part of the military draft. Dr. Sun Yat-sen wants you. Now, of course, we're talking about going into the military, and we're actually having a comparison between the American military and Taiwan's military.
That's right, Tim. I learned a couple of interesting things yesterday in our lesson. One of them was that here in Taiwan, military draftees can do what's called alternative service, where they'll receive some special training and maybe learn how to be an ambulance paramedic or something like that. It's very interesting.
Well, it definitely is very interesting. Now, of course, in the U.S., you know, the draft, they don't actually have it. You just have to register for the selective service. But basically, you're signing up saying, hey, you know what, if there is a draft, then I'm registered with the government, right? But of course, here in Taiwan, it's mandatory. You have to enter the military unless, of course, there's extenuating circumstances. Like, let's say that you are very ill, or maybe you have a mental disease or a physical disorder that will stop you from actually doing your duty in the military. And of course, if you're in prison, it's pretty hard to join the military, isn't it? They just won't let you out for that.
That's right. That's not a good enough reason to get out of jail.
that's too bad. Well, of course, it's definitely a different situation here than it is in the U.S. And they need to have, you know, a fairly substantial number of people in the military here. Because, you know what, it's a fairly small island. There's not really a heck of a lot of people. There's only, what, like 25 million people here? And, of course, in the U.S., there's like 300 million, right?
That's right. The U.S. is a lot bigger. There's a lot more land and things to defend or use the soldiers for. It's interesting how some countries in the world have mandatory military service, whereas other countries don't. Like the United States already has such a big military, they don't really need to have a draft or mandatory military service. Whereas other smaller countries like Taiwan, or I know that Israel also has mandatory draft where every male has to go serve in the military.
Well, I know that also. And in Israel, of course, I think many people can understand the reasons for that, because Israel's not a big place either. And they have a lot of, you know, other countries around them that maybe aren't so friendly to them, right?
That's right. They need to have lots of soldiers in their country to defend them in case somebody decides to attack or do something like that.
Yes, indeed. Well, now, of course, let's say that, you know, there's this draft going on. But let's say that, you know what, man, I really don't want to enter the military. I don't want to fight anybody else. I really have a big problem with this whole idea of war and things like that. So what would we call a person like that?
Well, Tim, somebody like that who objects to the war on maybe a moral or a philosophical grounds, we would call them a conscientious objector. And this is somebody who has very strong personal reasons for why they don't believe they should go fight in a war or take part in military service. And actually, in America, during some war times in the past, conscientious objectors have avoided their military service and gone on to do other things for the country that didn't involve killing people and going into battle.
Well, I know that's the situation in the U.S. I think the situation's a little bit different here. But I think that, you know, this conscientious objector thing really, really came to light, I think, during a very big war in the States, right? Or not in the States, when the States was fighting against somebody else.
That's right. We mentioned the Vietnam War yesterday on the program. And during that time, that era in the late 60s and early 1970s in America, there were many, many conscientious objectors who just were completely against the idea of going to Vietnam to fight people there. Some of them were able to convince the U.S. government that their beliefs were genuine, and these people were able to avoid the draft. Other people who were against the war and maybe couldn't convince the government to let them get out of their duty, the requirement, the military service, so they left the United States and went to places like Mexico or Canada or Europe to avoid this kind of a thing.
Well, I think, you know, that was a much different time. I think that the American public, I think, was really against the Vietnam War. And I think that was kind of different than other wars in the past, because I think Americans really supported those operations. But I think when it came to Vietnam, it was a very different situation, right?
That's right. A lot of people in the public were against the war in Vietnam, so there was a lot of pressure on the government to end the conflict as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing that that's over now. You know, that's quite a long time ago. What I think we should actually do right now is actually read through today's conversation. Mike and Da Minh continue to discuss the draft.
So, instead of regular military duty, you can do other types of work for the government?
Exactly. With my environmental science degree, I'm applying for an environmental protection job. However, there's a catch. I would have to serve 2 months longer than regular military draftees, but I get a bonus depending on where I'm stationed.
2 months isn't a long time. Besides, you'll get 2 years of work experience. What would your bonus be?
It would depend on where I'm stationed. There are regional bonuses for those stationed on the main island, on one of Taiwan's islets, or in high mountain areas.
Say, I just remembered. Your cousin holds both Taiwan and U.S. passports. Does he know he still has to register for the U.S. Selective Service?
I don't know, but I'll be sure to remind him. Does he have to register even if he resides in Taiwan?
Absolutely. Any U.S. male citizen between 18 and 25 has to register, even those with multiple passports.
I can't wait to see his face. Two armies tugging at him from either side of the world. Talk about being between a rock and a hard place. Well, that's kind of interesting that, you know, his cousin, who has a Taiwanese passport, and, of course, an American passport, he has to register with both. Oh, man, what a dilemma that is. Because imagine, you know, let's say he has to enter into the Taiwan military service, and then, oh, no, the U.S., they're having a draft now. They declared war on some other country. Oh, no. Well, what are they going to do? Are they going to yank him? What are they going to do? Cut him in half or something?
That would be a really tough situation. It reminds me of a friend of mine who was American-born Korean. And when we were growing up, his parents, of course, were Korean, but he grew up in America. And when he went to visit Korea as a teenager or in his early 20s, one day while he was maybe teaching English or something in Korea, he received a draft notice in the mail. And even though he grew up in America and he was still required by the Korean government to come do his military service in Korea, however, he decided not to do it and he came back to America.
Really?
True story.
And they actually let him out of the country? There was no problem with that?
There was no problem. I think actually they gave him a choice of you can either do the military service here in Korea or you can leave Korea. And he chose to go home.
Oh, I see. Now, is he allowed to go back to Korea?
I believe so, Tim.
Oh, but they're not going to just, you know, grab him and then shove him into the military when he comes back, right?
I wouldn't expect that, but you never know.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know that there's some people here that, you know, if they decide they want to have children, they'll actually go to America and have the child in America, so that way that child will have an American passport. And then in the future, you know, then they won't have to do military service in Taiwan. So, of course, there's many different laws out there and there's many different, you know, ways of looking at this. I don't know, man. It's up to you. If you're going to have a child, really, you have to make a choice. You know, do you want your child to be in the military? And, of course, some parents have decided, no, they don't want that. Well, let's take a closer look at today's conversation. Mike and Da Minh continue to discuss the draft. Now, remember yesterday's show, they were talking about the draft, and Da Minh was saying, hey, you know what? I'm finished college now, so it looks like I'm probably going to have to be joining the army pretty soon, so he's going to have to give up his apartment.
So, instead of regular military duty, you can do other types of work for the government? Now here, Mike is asking Da Minh kind of about what the choices are, what the options are for somebody who has to do their military duty. You don't just have to do regular service where you go to boot camp and you be a soldier. You can do maybe some other kinds of work for the government, maybe some other specialized training you can receive.
Well, that's right, because Daming says exactly, yes, that's right. We can do, or I can do, something different. He goes on to say, with my environmental science degree, I'm applying for an environmental protection job. Okay, so environmental science. Now, of course, that's science that's dealing with the environment. It's dealing with the natural environment of this earth. And he's got a degree in this. So, because he has this degree from college, he's applying for an environmental protection job. Now, think of it. Environmental protection. That means to protect the environment, to save the environment. So, he would go into this kind of a job. Well, I could imagine that, let's say there was some kind of an oil spill around Taiwan. Well, they'd send in the army to go and clean that up, right? And because he would be a part of this unit, well, he would probably go along and help them to do this. However, there's a catch. Ooh, now whenever there's a catch, it means there's something else that has to be done. Because I am going to be going into a different thing, doing a different kind of military duty. You know what? He has to serve 2 months longer than regular military draftees. So, let's say that a regular draftee has to serve 1 year, 8 months, okay? Well, that means that he would have to serve 1 year and 10 months, okay? Because the regular military draftees, they can get out sooner. When he goes on to say, but I get a bonus, depending on where I'm stationed. Now, if you're in the army or you're in the military and you're stationed somewhere, that means this is where your base is. This is where you're going to be living. So he gets a bonus. Well, hey, a bonus, that's so nice. Here we're talking about extra money. So depending on where he is serving his time, he could actually get a bonus. He could get extra money depending on where.
So is this kind of like a New Year's bonus you might get from your company, Tim?
Well, not exactly. This is a bonus because, hey, you know what? If you're living in an area, maybe it's a little more secluded, not, you know, very close to anything. Oftentimes what they'll do is they'll give you extra money. It's like a living allowance because, hey, you know what? It's going to cost you more for transportation costs and so on.
Oh, I see. Mike goes on to say, 2 months isn't a long time. Besides, you'll get 2 years of work experience. What would your bonus be? Well, 2 months isn't a long time, is it? It's actually only about 60 days. It's a short period of time that wouldn't be that bad for somebody to still be in the military. That's what Mike's saying here in the first part of his sentence. He goes on to give us another example of why it wouldn't be so bad to do this alternative service. He says, besides, you'll get 2 years of work experience. So when Daming gets out of the army, he'll have 2 whole years of experience using his degree that he got in college. And that's going to look good to any company or any boss that wants to hire him after he gets out of the military. What would your bonus be? Well, here, Mike's just curious about how much money or what kind of factors would influence the bonus that Daming would get when he left military service.
Well, that's right. And of course, Daming says it would depend on where I'm stationed. Okay. Now, remember, we're talking about this a bit. Let's say you're way high up in a mountain somewhere and the closest town is like 30 minutes away. Well, obviously, your transportation costs are going to be higher. So it does depend on where you're stationed, on where your base is, where you're located, where you're living. So, there are regional bonuses for those stationed on the main island, on one of Taiwan's islets, or in high mountain areas. So, when we say regional bonuses, it just means it depends on the area that you're living. If you're living on an island or one of the islets, well, you know what? Your transportation is going to be way up there. It's going to be harder for you. In fact, your phone bill is going to be higher because now you're going to have to be, you know, phoning long distance all the time. So, of course, the army is going to help out. The military will help out by giving a bonus. And of course, if you're in a high mountain area, again, it's going to take you longer to get to places, so you need more money. It's going to cost you more money to live there. And if you live in these areas, well, you know what? You're going to get a bonus. You're going to get extra money per month on top of the regular pay that you receive in the military. You know what, though, everybody? We really have to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to take a closer look at the rest of today's conversation. So make sure that you stay tuned in. Welcome back. If you just joined us, well, we're on the second day of the military draft. Dr. Sun Yat-sen wants you. Now, of course, we're doing a comparison in this show. We're talking about the difference, you know, with the American military and with the Taiwanese military. And of course, the draft is a different thing. In Taiwan, there is a draft, but in America, well, you have to register for selective service. So it just means that if there is a draft in America, then you might actually have to go. Now, a question I have for you, how do they do this? Like, let's say you're 19 or 18 in the U.S. Are they going to draft you, like, right when you're 18?
No, they will not draft anybody in America until there is a draft instituted by the Congress of the United States or the president. And that only happens when something really, really bad happens, like a war or an invasion or some kind of military emergency in the country. That would be the only time that America would have a draft. And at that time, they would begin to call people up for military service, starting at, I believe, around age 20. So the first people to be called up for the draft in America in the event of a draft would be 20-year-olds. And they would do this through a kind of lottery. So there would be many numbers in a big bowl, and someone, maybe the president or someone, would pick a number. And if that number were to match or somehow be related to your selective service number, it would mean that you would be called up at that time.
Oh, I see. So they start at the age 20, and then once they get all of the 20-year-olds, then they move up to 21, up to 25. And then I guess they would start moving back if they had to use all of those guys, right?
I would think that that would be the way it would go. It's been a long time since that's happened in America, though, thankfully. So,
yeah, definitely. It's not something that we're hoping to see in the future, right? Okay, well, let's move on with the conversation now. Well, we see here these Taiwan's islets and the main island and the high mountain areas. Now, do you have a story you can tell me about this?
I sure do, Tim. The Taiwan's islets that are referred to here in this sentence of the dialogue refer to places like Penghu or Matsu or maybe Lanyu, Orchid Island, or maybe Green Island. But also there's another famous one we have close to Taiwan, and that's Jinmen. Mm-hmm. Now, as probably most of our listeners know, Jinmen's very close to the coast of mainland China. And a lot of soldiers from Taiwan get sent there to serve their military service on the island of Jinmen. Now, actually, I've been to Jinmen 2 times, actually. Mm-hmm. The first time, a friend and I went to Fujian province in China, and we took a boat, kind of a tourist boat, right up to the coast of Jinmen. And we could see the Taiwanese soldiers and see the Taiwanese flag, and we could hear the Taiwanese national anthem playing. And it was a very interesting experience to go see Jinmen from the mainland Chinese side.
Mm-hmm.
And then about a year afterwards, some other friends and I flew from Taipei to Jinmen Island. And we spent a weekend kind of traveling around the island in a rental car and seeing Jinmen from the other side. And so it was a very interesting experience for me to go there and see the Taiwanese soldiers and really see this military service in action.
Wow, that would be pretty interesting. Now, I imagine that those soldiers are probably pretty alert. They're probably pretty aware of what's going on because, hey, you know, that's pretty close to China, isn't it?
That's right. They're very alert, and you'd better stay between the lines wherever you go and don't do anything too crazy or, yeah, they'll be angry with you.
Oh, no, you don't want that. You don't want an angry soldier because, hey, man, they got guns and you got to watch out for that kind of stuff. Well, let's go back to the conversation now and take a closer look at this.
Say, I just remembered. Your cousin holds both Taiwan and U.S. passports. Does he know he still has to register for the U.S. Selective Service? Well, Mike knows Da Ming's cousin, and this cousin has two passports, a U.S. one and a Taiwanese one. Maybe he was born in the U.S., or later in his life, the cousin was able to get a U.S. passport. Mike is asking, hey, Da Ming, does your cousin know that he's still eligible for the U.S. draft? Does this cousin know he must go to a U.S. post office and register for Selective Service? So this is a very serious thing for anybody who holds a U.S. passport who's a male. You have to do this. There's no way you can escape from this responsibility.
Well, that's right. And of course, he says, I don't know, but I'll be sure to remind him. So he doesn't know if his cousin, has registered for the U.S. Selective Service. But he's going to remind him. He's going to be sure he does this. He's going to go to his cousin and say, hey, if you haven't registered for this, make sure you do. He goes on to say, does he have to register even if he resides in Taiwan? So this is a question. Does he have to register for what? The U.S. Selective Service, even if he resides in Taiwan, even if he's still living in Taiwan, does he have to do this?
Absolutely. Any U.S. male citizen between 18 and 25 has to register, even those with multiple passports. Absolutely means 100% without a doubt for sure. That's the meaning of absolutely here. So Mike is saying you're right. He does have to register this cousin of yours. In fact, any U.S. male citizen between these ages, 18 and 25, has the responsibility of registering for the Selective Service, even those with multiple passports. So even if you have a passport from any other country in the world and a U.S. passport, you still have to go do this.
Oh, no. And then Da Ming says, I can't wait to see his face. So now, of course, when you can't wait to see somebody's face, it means you just know that person is going to be so surprised. They're going to be shocked. And in fact, you're thinking, oh, man, it's going to be so funny when I tell him this news because he's not going to know what to say. Two armies tugging at him from either side of the world. Okay, so you have the military in the U.S. and you got the military in Taiwan, and they're in different sides of the world. They're really far away from each other. But you know what? We say they're tugging at them because the one army is saying, okay, Taiwan is saying, hey, come, you have to be in our military. But then, oh, no, the U.S. military is saying, oh, no, you have to come and join our military. Now he's making kind of a joke here because obviously with the U.S. military, it's a little bit different. They don't have the draft going on currently. But you do still have to register for Selective Service. So if there is a draft, it would mean that, both armies would want them. So he thinks this is kind of funny. That's why he says, talk about being between a rock and a hard place. Now, if you're between a rock and a hard place, this is an idiom. And it just means, you know what? You're in a really difficult situation, one that's really hard to get out of. Because you know what? A rock is hard. And of course, a hard place, well, that would be hard also. So it doesn't matter what that he does. He's still going to find it really difficult because, hey, you know what? What if he has to go into Taiwan's military? And what if the U.S. does institute a draft? Well, what's he going to do?
He would be caught between two very difficult situations, wouldn't he, Tim? He'd have to maybe think of some way to get out of this.
I would think so. Well, maybe he could just go to Canada.
That's always an option. Or become a conscientious objector, maybe.
Well, exactly. Now, of course, when you're a conscientious objector, I think basically they're saying there has to be some kind of a religious reason for this, right?
Not necessarily religious, but mainly religious, yes, but if you could convince the government of the United States that you are morally opposed to war and it's completely against your beliefs, then this would be an option. This would be one way for you to be declared a conscientious objector. But it doesn't necessarily have to involve God.
Oh, okay. Now, before it did, right? Like many years ago, it was like you had to say, oh, yes, I believe in one God or something like that, right?
That's right. There was an act of Congress. There was a law that said conscientious objectors had to be objecting to the war on religious premises, on a religious grounds. But now that law has been changed so that you don't have to bring religion into the argument.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, you know what, everybody? We really, really have to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to have today's sentence of the day. So don't go away.
Sentence for the day.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, well, you know what? You missed an awful lot of the show, but that's okay, because now we have today's sentence of the day. And hey, I gotta ask you, Patrick, what is today's sentence of the day?
You've got to pay your dues.
Ooh, now if you pay your dues, it means you're paying what you owe. You have to put in the time or the effort. So basically, if you pay your dues, basically you're paying back something that you owe to somebody or something, right?
That's right. You're fulfilling your responsibility. You're doing something that you have to do. Even if you don't want to, you still have to pay your dues or do this thing that's required of you.
That's right. And of course, one of those things here in Taiwan is if you're a man and you're over the age of 19, well, you're going to have to join the military. You're going to have to be drafted. And of course, in the U.S., well, basically, when you're 18, you have to make sure that you register for selective service. So that's how this relates to today's lesson. Well, I hope you enjoyed this show. I know that we enjoyed doing this show for you. Of course, this is all the time that we have left. Make sure you tune in again. For now, my name is Tim.
My name is Patrick.
See ya.
Bye-bye.